Welcome. You are listening to the Park Avenue Synagogue podcast, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's better to hear it live, this is the place to catch the latest sermon, conversation, and select program. If you like what you're hearing or want to learn more about our community, check out PASYN.org. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to get a notification for our next episode. Enjoy and see you in shul. Shabbat shalom. This past week, I had the honor of participating in the World Zionist Organization's Jerusalem meeting on the challenges facing the Jewish people in a post-October 7th world. And as I listened to all the leaders from within Israel and from around the globe, I was struck by just how many challenges our people face. The war in Gaza, the return of the hostages, the multiple traumas Israel faces, those victimized on October 7th, the over 100,000 internal refugees displaced since October 7th, the ongoing psychic trauma of the soldiers and their families, and the knowledge that Israel's war on Hamas is coming at the cost of thousands of innocent Palestinian lives. There are challenges in the media, on social media, a spike in global anti-Semitism, the about-to-bubble-over question of Haredi service in the IDF, the global politicization of this conflict, be it the Michigan primaries or the British House of Parliament, and the generational divide as to how this war is being understood by diaspora Jewry. It's a lot. It's overwhelming. And these are just a few of the challenges on our people's docket. But the subject that seemed to be coming up most, about which I want to talk about this morning, is what Israelis call in Hebrew Yom Acharei, in English, the day after. For me, and perhaps for you, it's a little disorienting, verging on the unseemly, to talk about Yom Acharei, the day after. There are families still shattered in their grief, hostages whose fate hangs in the balance. This war is very much still being prosecuted. I was due to attend a memorial service at the site of the Nova Music Festival massacre, but it was canceled due to a roadblock of protesters from hostage families demanding their release. Those families are not thinking about Yom Acharei. They're focused solely on Hayom, today. Bring the hostages back now, and then we can talk about tomorrow. And yet, in the plenaries, in the breakout sessions, in Israel, in America, that's what's being talked about. If, and please God, when this war concludes, what exactly is the path forward? Specifically, what is the future vision for Israelis and Palestinians? Because if you haven't noticed, things are already in motion. The ground is shifting beneath our feet. The president, by way of Secretary of State Blinken and other proxies, is laying the groundwork for U.S. recognition of Palestinian statehood. The two-state solution, in Blinken's words, is, quote, the only way to end a cycle of violence. This past week, Prime Minister Netanyahu presented his own plan, which, other than the shared use of the word plan, bears very little resemblance to the Biden plan. The prime minister has adamantly rejected international diktats, stating that a Palestinian state would be a reward for terror. And not to be outdone, Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, advanced a proposal last week for an additional 3,000 settlement homes. In his words, quote, an appropriate Zionist response to terror. Pronouncements are being made, roadmaps are being drafted, and resolutions, be it in the Knesset or the one in the U.S. Senate, are being sponsored. Active as this war may be today, the train to tomorrow is leaving the station. So let's, as they say, dive in. There's no shortage of press on this subject, much of which I imagine many of you have read, and a whole lot of you have forwarded to me. Mind you, if you ever worry that you forgot to send me an article, rest assured that my news aggregating father has already done so with an explanation of why this article is the most important or the most idiotic thing he has ever read. For those of you who would advocate for a two-state solution, the reasons are a combination of historical, political, practical, moral, and Jewish. As Gidi Grinstein recently pointed out, historically speaking, calls for a two-state solution are not actually new. Ever since the 1936 Peel Commission, there's been broad international consensus in some sort of Israeli-Palestinian partition plan. Every American president since Clinton has endorsed it, as have many Israeli prime ministers, including Ehud Barak, Ariel Sharon, Ehud Olmert, Yair Lapid, and the 1.0 version of Benjamin Netanyahu. One may not like the thought of U.S. recognition of Palestinian statehood, but there's ample precedent. 193 countries have already done so. A second reason is practical. Namely, whatever one's feelings may be for the Palestinians, if you're invested in the security of the Jewish state, then the Palestinians must be given the opportunity and the burden of self-governance. As Harvard's former president Larry Summers once said, in the history of the world, no one has ever washed a rented car. There is nothing, I repeat, nothing, that justifies the violence of October 7th or any other violent day. But common sense dictates that unless a people, Palestinian or otherwise, are given a path to self-rule, then the cycle of violence will continue. Besides, as many have argued, myself included, Israel's present war remains just in the eyes of America, the Gulf states, and the global community, and its own citizenry, only insofar as it takes place alongside a diplomatic path. Netanyahu's half-baked post-war plan, his recent boasts of having stymied the two-state solution, and his foreign minister's plan to harden the Jewish presence in the West Bank undercut Israel's short and long-term global standing and security. And third, or third and fourth, the moral and Jewish reasons. Israel's founding documents bear the stated goal of being both a Jewish and a democratic state. The present path to what some refer to as the one-state non-solution stands in opposition to those stated values. Math is math. Israel can be a Jewish state. Israel can be a democratic state, but it can't be both without a two-state solution. And as Jews, if the promise of Israel is a right to be a free people in our own land, then how can we possibly deny another people that self-same right? Everyone deserves a place to call home, and nobody knows that more than the Jews. So I'm thinking that half the room is feeling really affirmed right now, and half the room and my father is really annoyed. So let's flip the switch. For those who would advocate against a two-state solution, they would say that calling for a Palestinian state is a delusional, self-soothing, short-sighted, and seductive siren song of liberal Jews who are oblivious to the harsh history, facts, and lived realities of the Middle East. Yes, there have been partition plans, two-state plans, and otherwise for over 100 years. You know what there hasn't been? A Palestinian peace partner who's willing to embrace Israel's right to exist. From the long history of Arab rejectionism to the instrumentalizing of the Palestinian refugees in a manner that betrays the truth that it is the borders of 1948 and not 1967 at the root of the Palestinian grievance, to October 7th, to the present chants of from the river to the sea, with whom exactly are we inviting to be our neighbors? History cuts both ways. Two can play at that game. And yes, actually, present calls for a two-state solution are a reward for terror, a vindication of Hamas's strategy of October 7th. It's not just that those who call for a two-state solution are putting the carriage before the horse, having yet to figure out small details like borders, capitals, governance, security, refugees, and otherwise. October 7th revealed to the world the murderous intentions of a would-be Palestinian state. Why in the world would Israel be interested in establishing a Hamas stand as a next-door neighbor, an autocratic state poised to launch an endless series of Iranian-supplied October 7ths, only now it's not just from the south or the Hezbollah north, but in Israel's center, a stone throw away from major population centers, attacks that will make October 7th look like a picnic. Practically speaking, and having just returned, I can tell you that Israel is emotionally threadbare right now. There is zero trust in the Palestinians after October 7th. The Israeli left is dead. If there is a time that is ripe for a full-court press on two states, now is positively not the time. And don't lecture me about Israel's standing in the international community. Last I checked, there's no shortage of stateless people on this earth. The fact that the world is championing the Palestinians and not, say, the Kurds, the Rohingya, or the Uyghurs says more about the world's feelings towards the only Jewish state than it does about Israel. And as for the moral or Jewish argument, of course democracy is a value. Incidentally, not a value not enjoyed by the Palestinians under present Hamas leadership or presumably any other future Palestinian state. So given the choice of a less than democratic Israel and a Groundhog Day October 7th filled future, I would take the former over the latter any day, as would any sensible person. I too can make an argument from Jewish values, and not just because, as many Jews would claim, that Maaleh Adumim, Ariel, and Alon Shvut are just as much a part of Israel as Tel Aviv, Beersheba, and Afula, but the last 2,000 years is a case study in the price of Jewish vulnerability. The first priority of any state, all the more so the Jewish state, is the security of its citizenry, and it should be priority number one of the global Jewish people. A two-state solution will bring neither peace nor security, and it's time for liberal Zionists to move on. I could do this all day. We all maybe could. Putting an argument in one column and then in the other, every point finding its counterpoint on the other side. I'm reminded of the rabbi who was asked to settle an argument between a husband and wife, and the rabbi listened to the wife, nodding his head, and said, "You're right." And then it was then the husband's turn to state his case, to which the rabbi nodded his head and responded, "You're also right." To which the rabbi's intern, who had been standing there the whole time, blurted out, "But rabbi, how can they both be right?" To which the rabbi responded, "You're right too." It's an old joke, but it's also, on a certain level, the fundamental role of religious leadership, from the rabbi's office to Moses in this week's Torah reading, to acknowledge that in any family dispute, especially one with such incredibly high stakes, we need to find a way to keep the conversation civil, to make sure that both sides keep talking, even and especially if they passionately disagree. Isn't that what Moses did in this morning's Torah reading after Israel sinned and God's wrath reached a boiling point? It was Moses who played the role of prophetic intercessor, on the one hand making it abundantly clear to the Israelites that they had sinned in creating the golden calf, and on the other hand, staying God's hand from destroying Israel in a fit of divine rage. It is arguably Moses' finest hour, not standing before Pharaoh or standing before the splitting of the sea, but standing in the breach on that mountain, keeping a community and God together, enabling them to journey forward no matter what the fault lines are within. It is an intercessory role, not just for Moses and not just for rabbis, but for all of us, to keep the conversation civil, to acknowledge the argument of the other side, and to know that in a world where the Jewish people do not lack for enemies, we dare not make enemies from within our own ranks. And were I to be a younger rabbi, or maybe an older rabbi, I would just leave it there. You're right, and you're right, and now let's rise for the Musaf service. But to do so strikes me as lacking that all-important leadership value of courage. So I want to recognize that for some of you, maybe many of you, you may not like what I'm about to say, but in the spirit of what I have said, I hope you feel that your voice has been heard and has a place in this community. I think, based on all that I have seen and all that I have heard, that the time is not right for a top-down two-state solution. Israel is in the midst of a war. There are hostages to be saved. We are all traumatized. It is all too raw, and the time is not ripe. And I believe, based on all that I have seen and all that I have heard, that the only path forward is a two-state solution. Not today and not tomorrow, but in a future about which we speak about openly and proudly, towards which we seed and fund ideas and initiatives, supporting all those leaders in Israel and America working towards such a vision and opposing those who don't. It is to that future towards which our eyes should gaze. Liberal Zionism, the belief in a Jewish and democratic state of Israel, of two states for two peoples, may be on the wane, decline, or even dead, but that doesn't mean it's not a noble and necessary idea to pursue. To hold on to an ideal, to publicly affirm it, and to work towards it, even if its realization is not for the here and now. It's not an obvious position, and it contains, no question, a bit of an inner contradiction. But then again, isn't it the very spirit that has impelled our people from our very beginning? What is the story of the wilderness wanderings, if not the journey to a promised land, whether we get there or not? What is the vision of the prophets Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, if not the aspiration for a return from exile? What is the story of our last 2,000 years, if not the tale of a people who, no matter what, in thick and thin, never lost their hope? Od lo avda tikvatenu. There is nothing wrong. In fact, there's everything right and everything Jewish about staying true to an ideal, whether we realize it in our lifetime or not. So let's add or retain one more ideal to our list, a two-state solution. Please, God, when the time is ripe, may we live to see its realization. Shabbat shalom. Thank you for listening to the Park Avenue Synagogue podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more about our community, check out PASYN.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah.